You're listening to highlights from OTBAM, Off the Ball's new daily breakfast show. It's live every weekday morning from 7:45. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube or Twitter, or listen live at offtheball.com.
Let's start with Munster. Like, this team have been brilliant over the last couple of years at grinding stuff out, particularly in the last 5-6 minutes of games. And I guess that's why Munster fans will be a little bit worried when they look at what happened yesterday. There's the brilliant performance from them. There's the attacking vigour. There's the, a losing bonus point on the road to keep you top of the group. That's all the positives. You just would like to see them, if they're going to be the very top echelon of European teams at the moment, be able to grind out that winning position.
Yeah, I think there's probably an underlying issue. It was probably spoken about in commentary yesterday when Dunners were speaking, but probably their discipline just lends themselves to put them, they get themselves in really good good positions, and then their discipline just affects them at a critical moment. You know, like even someone like Pete, which is so unlike him, giving away a penalty for 10 metres, you know, giving away Racing had a penalty on the halfway line. He speaks to the touch judge, gets picked up on the mics, and then he's marked 10 yards. You know, that's probably, you know, that's 3 points. At the end then, you'd want them to be able to close out the game, but they end up giving away two penalties in kickable position. So that's probably the one thing that is probably affecting them throughout the last 4 or 5 weeks. But I think in general, their performance levels yesterday were brilliant. You know, I think Ian Keighley had a great game, probably buying that last kick at the end, which put them under a small bit of pressure. But I think Chris Farrell played really well. Keith Earls, after being sick over for a 2 week period, he's really back flying. You know, not a lot of people know, but he would have lost a lot of weight when he was sick for so long. So, you know, he seems to be really flying again. So yeah, they're there, thereabouts, but I think they're probably, their discipline level is something they're going to be really disappointed with.
That's fixable though, right?
Yeah, certainly. I think there just seems to be a level of frustration in terms of, you know, they did so well in the Leicester back-to-back games, for whatever reason. Yesterday, there just seemed to be a small bit of frustration level that weren't there. And that just eked out into, you know, killing them when it came to discipline.
When you look at the Munster performance yesterday, it's probably fair to say that they left it behind them a little bit with regards to the win. But then at the same time, it is a losing bonus point. And the position that Racing were in with a couple of minutes to go when they could have gone for the corner, but mercifully, really, in hindsight, took the 3 points. It is a good result for Munster in hindsight, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, look, they're still odds on to get a home semi, a home quarter final. In terms of, you know, they're playing Cast, who mathematically are playing for something, but they need two unlikely results to go with them. So, I think in the overall context, if the pool that they were given, and if they were going into round six at home, top of their pool, they would have taken this. And, you know, given that's everything that's gone on with, you know, Rassi and the change, all that kind of stuff, you know, I think they're in a pretty good position.
It is a real pity when you look at how well Dunnacha Ryan played in the game that he's playing for the opposition and that he's not going to be part of the Six Nations squad from an Ireland perspective, because that grit, that grizzle, just that that level of knowing exactly how to annoy your Munster teammates of everybody to be able to do that. It's like, geez, it'd be good to have that around, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think you look, you know, he is a big game player in terms of, you know, the dark arts. He certainly knows how to get them done very, very well. And I think, you know, that kick chase off, you know, when they went a couple of points down, you know, with 2 or 3 minutes at the end to get that turnover and win that was just, you know, that was just a moment of brilliance from Dunners. You know, listen to his post-match interview, hearing him say that he really enjoyed it. He actually probably did, you know, in terms of the physical edge and, you know, the competitive nature that he has. He would have really enjoyed going up. He'd lived with Billy Holland for, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years. So going up against Billy like that, it would have been a, you know, a real competitive personal battle that he would have really enjoyed.
There's a Dave McIntyre tweet from the weekend. Final thought after a serious weekend of rugby. Tadhg Byrne and Dunnacha Ryan were the best two Irish locks on show. Neither will be considered for the Six Nations. Very hard to justify that. 300 likes for Dave McIntyre. That's unusual. But it's true, like the Tadhg Birne, everybody was raving about his performance, like the full gamut of all the skills on display. And like, we're a really small country when it comes to this kind of stuff, and I understand the rationale behind it, but
Tadhg Birne might be in a slightly different position because he has committed and he is coming home. So he might be thrown into the mix during the Six Nations. He could be in the extended squad purely because of what's coming down the line in 18 months, you know, with the World Cup, that Joe might want him in and around the squad. So he could possibly be in the extended squad just because he's given that commitment. That has happened through a couple of times. I know Niall Morris was in and around the Irish squad when he had committed to come back to Leinster. So there might be a possibility that Tadhg, but obviously Dunners definitely won't be, which is a real, real disappointment because, you know, he is someone that any team would be very lucky to have.
What exactly is it about Tadhg Birne that makes him such an exciting prospect at the idea of him coming home? What does he offer that's different to the current people involved in the Ireland squad?
I think it's his versatility around the fact that he can play in the back row and the second row, and his contact skills in terms of offloading. He gave him a slight point of difference over other guys in that position. But I do think he is probably a hybrid of, you know, a back row and someone like Dunica Ryan, who can really do the dark arts really well, extremely physical in close quarters. But, you know, the way the Scarlets play, he's just improved massively, given the freedom to play and try those offloads. I just think he seems to be a very good all-round player.
So overall, Munster are going to feel relatively happy about this and their prospects of getting a home quarterfinal, because we just know from the history of this tournament that it's not impossible to win it from an away quarterfinal situation, but the difference between home quarterfinal and away quarterfinal is very pronounced, particularly in recent years.
Yeah, massive. You know, that's everyone's goal at the start of the competition. Get a home quarterfinal, put yourselves in to see whatever way the draw goes, see where you are in the semis then. But you know, I think Thomond Park quarterfinal day is one of the best places to play rugby in Europe. So their odds on, the likelihood is they are going to get, you'd be unsure how serious Cast are going to take in terms of the chance of potentially topping the group. They need Leicester to do them a favour as well. So it's highly unlikely, but you know, they might come and try and play. But I think Munster's performance this weekend lends themselves to certainly getting a good victory this week.
Yeah, just a quick word about Leicester. Didn't manage to register a point against Cast, absolutely annihilated. That wouldn't have happened when you were at Leicester, would it? That kind of, let's send out a team who, no matter who they are representing that proud tradition of the club, who don't score.
Yeah, no, it's something that, you know, I check the results every single week. I keep up to date with a lot of the past players. I'm quite friendly, actually, with two of the coaching staff there. It's bitterly disappointing from a past player's point of view. They just seem to, for whatever reason, they're just not firing. And they're in a position now where a lot of past players are talking about it. Some guys coming out on social media, and you know, which is not, they're not in a good place. I think it's something that should never happen for Leicester as an identity. And to be in a really weird way, and not taking the pressure off my mate, but I genuinely think it's above them. You look at the signings and what's happened over the last couple of years, you know, just not a whole lot of foresight. You know, one of the big things that I have an issue with is, why sign Matt Tomua and JP Peterson at the same time? You know, you're spending, they're your two marquee players. You know, go buy what you need. You need someone like Dunica Ryan. You need a hard-nosed second role to be playing week in, week out. And that's what they're lacking at the moment. So, bit disappointing, but you know, they have to try and fix it over the next few months.
Obviously, Leicester have their own set of problems at the moment, but it seems to be a wider issue around the Premiership and their performances in Europe at the moment. And I see Rob Kitson writing in The Guardian yesterday that this could become a wider problem going into the Six Nations, that this symptom of English rugby underperforming in Europe could actually manifest itself when it comes to the England side in the Six Nations, which is great for us to see. But I feel that's a tad bit of an overreaction from Kitson there.
Yeah, I think so. I think the one thing you will find about the Premiership and English rugby is that it's a war of attrition, and the injury rates are a lot higher than they are in the Pro 12. And that's just because guys have to play all the time. But the only players that don't have to play all the time are Eddie Jones's top 28, 30 guys, because they have a deal with the PRL. So they're going to get, they got a couple of weeks rest over, weekends rest over Christmas time. And I think that's, it's not going to be a factor for Eddie Jones. I think he's too smart an operator to let that seep into the group.
News this morning that Billy Vanapola is out after getting injured at the weekend. So they're not quite the same team without him.
No, well, no team is the same. You look at the Saracens, and their win ratio, as someone said on BT Sports, that their win ratio when he plays is something like 85%. When he doesn't, it's only like 55, 60%. So, but he's world class. His ball carrying ability is second to none. And you saw a couple of glimpses of that this weekend. And I think if he had stayed on the pitch, they probably might have been might have got the win that they needed rather than the draw.
Let's talk about Leinster. Obviously, stuck 55 points on Glasgow before a not quite full RDS, which I don't really fully understand, given how sensational the rugby that they're playing at the moment is. It wasn't really something that they can learn that much from. Glasgow were decent for about 12, 15 minutes, but after that, it was one-way traffic.
Yeah, they've just picked off where they left off last weekend. They're just on a roll now. The confidence levels are extremely high. And I spoke about it last week. Their transition from defence into attack, and even from attack into defence, is incredible. And they just have that... they just have that switch that they click straight away in both counts. They're just an incredible side at the moment. There's a lot of excitement. You look at probably, if you freeze frame one of the last tries that they get, and you look at the age profile of five or six of those guys in that picture, you're kind of going, oh my God, this team is going to be around for a long, long time. And they just need to keep it going now. They are going to Montpellier. It's going to be tough for them. But, and I wouldn't be surprised if James Lowe doesn't play this weekend, purely based on the fact that to have an experienced nine and Gibson Park coming off the bench down in France, as well as Lowe played this weekend, I just think there might be something to warrant in that department.
I just want to, so from that Kitson piece, maybe it was a different piece in The Guardian, talking about Leinster, particularly those back-to-back Leinster wins against English champions Exeter last month, when I thought Stuart Lancaster's team outthought as much as outfought their opponents. And then he goes on to go, the big thing that strikes you as Lancaster extols the virtues of the Leinster schools and sub-academy structure is that luck has little to do with any of this. Top-level coaching practices are trickling directly down the pathway from Joe Schmidt, Andy Farrell and Lancaster himself. Teenage players are being regularly exposed to a consistently higher standard of rugby. Leo Cullen obviously airbrushed from the entire Leinster coaching ticket there by a key member of the English rugby media. Like, all joking aside, it does mean that the chances of Leinster keeping Stuart Lancaster, I mean, he's obviously signed a new deal, but if I'm in charge of one of those English teams, if I'm in charge of a Leicester or whoever, I'm look at the rugby this guy's playing, and look at his knowledge of the game now in Ireland and also in England the whole way through. He must be one of the most attractive coaching options for anybody in the English game in particular at the minute.
Yeah, massively. But that's just the nature of the beast. It's a professional sport. He's doing an incredible job, and you're going to be touted from that. It's you play well and then you get opportunities elsewhere. But the onus is on, Mick Dawson and Dave Nusafour to make sure that he doesn't go anywhere. And I think that's a very important point from Leinster's perspective, that they need to make sure that he stays put. The fact that Leo doesn't get mentioned there, look, he's an English journalist, he's going to talk up his own, that's just the way they are. But I Leo is an extremely smart operator, and Leo, having played with him in Leicester, would have picked up a lot from you know, playing under Paddy Howard in terms of developing a squad, because that's exactly what Paddy Howard did. He had probably about 35 to 45 guys that he trusted to go play and win anywhere. And I think that's what Leo has done within the Leinster squad. It's taken a while, but he doesn't care. He'll throw anyone from 1 to 45 in, and he thinks that they're going to perform, which I personally think, having been there and seen Leo and how he was within that group, that has come from something that Leo has been a part of before.
The scary thing about this Leinster team, Johnny, is that they've got serious potential to still improve, particularly defensively. I mean, we saw that James Lowe error for the last Glasgow try yesterday, and Leo Cullen was pretty open on Sky Sports afterwards, saying that, look, he hasn't fully bedded into the defensive plan yet. So straight away, you've got a glaring error there, which has obvious upshot. And you just start to think now how good Leinster can get defensively to add to this unbelievably scintillating attacking game plan they already have.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people know, but defence of all is something that is really, you know, is completely system-based. So, you know, if you don't understand the knowledge, don't understand how that system has worked at the start, it will take you, you know, possibly a couple of months to get accustomed to that, and then make the correct reads. That's a bad read. So it's just obviously something that it has come from before, where, you know, he's entitled to do that and other guys back him up and behind. So, but that's not how Leinster systems work. So he is going to improve throughout the next couple of weeks. And, you know, I think everyone knows that. So yeah, there is definitely improvement. And as I already said, the age profile of these guys, so they're going to improve anyway with age. The more they play, everyone's going to improve.
Yeah, I think Lowe's only 25 as well. Like, and he's the granddaddy of that back. Obviously, he's in the same way, but if he's not on the team, then they are unbelievably young, and the potential is huge. I just want to talk a little bit about Ulster as well. Obviously, we've had these concerns about whether or not Rory Best is going to make it all the way to the World Cup, and then he puts in a performance like that against La Rochelle, where he's man of the match, where as they're chasing like 78, 79 minutes in, and you're looking for people to get up and chase a kick, he's the first one arriving on the scene at the end of that. It's real kind of, it's heroic stuff from him, and it was a huge win from an Ulster perspective, because so often we've thought, did they just quit on their coach? And then they come back with a performance like that, which clearly suggests that they're not quitting on Les Kiss at this stage.
Yeah, I think, you know, Rory's obviously been in and out over the last couple of months. So I think it's, you know, losing a leader like that is massive. He's their talisman. And they put in a really good shift this weekend. And Bestie's he's a proud, proud Ulster man. And I think probably what has been said over the last few weeks about questing players and like that, whether they're giving up on their coach, would hurt guys like that. And I think that was a performance that showed that they wanted to put it in, not only for Kissy, but for themselves, to try and shut probably the media up in terms of what they're saying about them.
Yes, Stockdale also not bad, and happy to get involved in the scraps with one of those big props as well at one point.
Yeah, it's always a good sign when you see a back three player jumping in to... but then, look, that's a sign of unity. You know, some guys actually plan some stuff that, you know, you kick something off very early to try and intimidate people. Nothing strong, but you have a presence there and everyone's in. And, I think it just creates a small bit of a sense of unity about the group.
Good finish from him as well to get in the corner. There was, like, not that much space. So he's, like, he brushed off the fact that there was a setback against Leinster where there's a couple of tackles missed. And, you know, you're always looking for young players to bounce back from that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Look, his finishing ability is never in question. And, you know, he's a big boy. So I think probably when he misses a couple of tackles, there are questions asked. But, you know, look, he's certainly on a high. He has performed pretty well in a team that hasn't been performing pretty great. He's had errors. And unfortunately, in the back three, when you make an error, everyone can see it. So puts you under a small bit of pressure, but good to see him put in another performance this weekend, and good for Ireland going into Six Nations.
Was there anything you saw on Saturday that would suggest that all these worries we had around Leinster's or around Ulster's pack might now be coming to an end? Obviously, you mentioned Rory Best and Rodney Ayew made one brilliant carry as well, but when it came to scrum time, it still seems like a bit of a worry, particularly early on in that game, that they're not going to be able to go and have this solid foundation and actually qualify top of this group as a result of that.
Look, there is something that probably they do lack in terms of scrum time. But like again, you know, they've been missing Bestie. But yeah, look, I think there is a slight worry over them. And the important thing for Ulster now is that they are still in a position where they could possibly not qualify. It is unlikely, but mathematically, if they went down and had a bad loss over in the Rico against Wasps, they could find themselves struggling to get out of the pool, given that, you know, Quinns are heading to La Rochelle. That could be any kind of score, because I doubt that Quinns are going to bring any of their first teamers over there, given the position they're in. So, they need to back it up now. I think that's something that, you know, everyone has been speaking about. They put in a good performance, or they, you know, drag themselves out of, you know, the abyss in Europe, two good wins, and then they have the Interpro series and they're a bit all over the shop. But they ground out a performance against Munster, and then they've got two really bad performances either side of that. So they need to back it up this weekend. And if they do back it up, then, yeah, you know, you can probably stop asking questions of where they're at mentally.
Yeah. And that'll be good, a bit of stability there. We've obviously been doing our depth chart, our power rankings ahead of the Six Nations. Time is ticking on this one, so we're going to look at the centres today to get your thoughts on it. We're going to start with inside centre. And, I mean, if Gary Ringrose was fit, this would all be really difficult to decipher exactly what was going to happen. But Robbie Henshaw is our pick for starting at number 12. Roy Scannell, Stuart McCluskey. And then Darren Cave, I think, is just there because we needed a fourth person on the list, because there's no way he's getting near that squad after his performances. Obviously, the main issue here is not that Robbie Henshaw, where is he going to start? It's like, who plays 12 and who plays 13 when it's him and Bundy? I guess we can have may as well straight look at the outside centre one as well, because that'll kind of give you a sense of where the debate is. Bundy is the clear lead. Gary Ringrose obviously out injured at the minute. And then Chris Farrell, I think, will have done his case a world of good by getting back into form and playing well, and sorry, getting back fit and back into form straight away as well. So really, you'd say it's Bundy Aki is definitely going to start alongside Robbie Henshaw.
Yeah, I think Robbie be 12 and Bundy Aki be 13. And then you'd be Chris Farrell, your third choice. But they would be the three now for me, that no matter what happens, if one of them gets injured, if Bundy or Robbie get injured in this round, then I would think you'd probably find that Chris would probably either shift into 12 or 13, and Bundy would, they'd swap around. I just think Chris's performance over the last couple of weeks have put him probably ahead in terms of Rory Scannell and himself. And he's a kind of a bit more of a like for like in terms of the way Joe would play Robbie if Robbie got injured, that, you know, it's the ball carrying ability and then kind of more offloading. So that kind of option would probably lend itself more to Chris Farrell going straight in at 12 and then leaving Bundy at 13. But yeah, I'd have Robbie at 12 and Bundy at 13, but I'd be swapping them kind of in and around different things for different plays, which is easy enough done in the centre.
You mentioned like for like when it comes to Chris Farrell there, and that's certainly true when it comes to a skill set. But does he also provide something different just because of his physique? He looks like a flanker almost.
Yeah, he does. He's probably a massive, massive man. And, you know, I think, you know, you saw yesterday when someone so big runs those lines close to the line and you've got someone who's playing so well like Keats or Johnny, they can pick those short lines out really, really easily and, you know, creates a lot of inroads. So he does have a point of difference just given his size. And, you know, going to France first up is something that's not going to be daunting to him in any way, shape or form. He knows French rugby so well. So that obviously has another plus in terms of if anything did happen, one of those two guys.
So this weekend. None of those subs are actually going to make the bench. What happens at centre if one of them gets injured in the middle of a game? Is it like, does Jordan Larmour make the bench because he can play fullback wing and maybe they think he can play in the centre?
I would probably think that it would be Keith Earls going into the centre. I would have thought they've used that before, and, you know, Earls, he's played international, probably a decent amount of international rugby at 13, so that would probably be the quickest fit. But that would be my choice. But yeah, it would be a big ask to throw Jordan Larmour in there at 13 if something did happen very early in the game. But
Joey Carberry maybe making the bench on that basis? That
I don't know. I think you've enough versatility. I think Ian Keatley covers 15 as well. He's played some European Cup games, and I think he's been he's played. I think he covers 15, or he's been on the bench before. So
yeah, okay.
Yeah, no. Look, I think it was probably smart from Leo and Stuart Lancaster this weekend to give Jordan Lamar a bit of a dig at 13 to just try and show here he does play 13 and he does cover, and we're happy enough to throw him in a European Cup game there, kind of with 25-30 minutes to go. So yeah, he is going to be talked about in that position, but I just think Earls, he gives you a small bit more experience and the form that he's in.
Yeah. Alright, Johnny, great stuff. Thanks a million. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, guys.
You've been listening to a highlights podcast from OTBAM. If you want to watch us live, we're on Facebook, Twitter and YouTube every morning from 7:45 a.m.